A.W. Masters, Reel 6.
I've heard it said in some cases on the training ship that they might tell you to stand in a corner for a couple of hours or look at the wall for... Was this done?
Not to my knowledge.
Not to your knowledge.
No, it wasn't never in my time. No. Never in any ship I was in. And I was in ships of all sorts of varying grades of discipline. Mm. But I never saw that.
But going on from punishment, and you said it wasn't a sadistic circus. I mean, it was done, corporal punishment was done quickly.
Oh, yes. It was over and done with and forgotten sort of thing.
Yes, it wasn't made into a ritual.
No, not at all.
Can you tell me about swimming then, swimming instruction? That was done alongside in the hulk, lying alongside.
If the ship was there, but otherwise, at Shotley, for instance, they had an ordinary swimming bath. Yes. 6-6 and 3-6, I think it was now. But the boys who were, say, quite a number were reluctant to swim at all, and they used to have instruction ashore. You see, give them the rudimentary motions, and hop in. And there would be the instructor there, and, of course, quite a number of good swimmers always there. So that the kids were encouraged, and that would also apply in the dog watches, you see. They could go to school, they could go swimming, they could go to the gym, they could go anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if the youngster was intent on mastering the job, well, the road was open.
Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't, again, people have said that the swimming in the Navy was very hard. I mean, you had to, you were forced a bit if you couldn't swim, that you were thrown in. And you had to make the best of it.
I have heard of that, but by and large, that didn't apply. Everybody was human. Because, I mean, you'd always come up against the case of people who just couldn't and wouldn't. So, yeah, everybody didn't swim.
I think you said that things like swimming, hard but not brutal, was the expression that you used. It was hard. You had to be...
Well, the point was, you see, there was your job. Right, do it. But there was no sort of driving, there was no compulsion, except, of course, they could achieve the same end by ridicule. I mean, they could say, well, everybody here can swim bar you. You see, and of course, at the point somebody becomes the target for all sorts of criticism, well, they usually get under their rein and they do something about it. Oh no. Then, of course, in ships, you see, swimming would be on over the side. Mm-hmm. You take it like the Mediterranean and the tropics or anywhere where there are no sharks about. But even if there were sharks, they used to drop an explosive over the side, frighten them away, and then hop in.
Yeah. Yeah, but they did.
Oh, yes. That's what they did.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Never heard that one before. And did you have to actually do a swimming test while you were training? What did that comprise again?
I think it was two lengths of the bath. I forget now. I don't think I ever altered it, actually. And the bath was, we'll say, 30 yards long.
Yeah. And this was in your duck suit or in...
Canvas suit.
Canvas suit, yes. Going on from that, tell me something about the instructors. You made the point before that they were selected for their ability to instruct, in fact. How did the Navy measure instruction ability, in fact, do you reckon? I
mean, by results.
By results. Some people couldn't bring the results.
Well, I mean, you know, there's always people in every walk of life. They'd like to air their knowledge but can't impart it to others. I mean, after all, instruction is imparting of knowledge. And if a man was successful or he had a good class, I mean, some instructors could get out of a class of real dunces. And by perseverance and, of course, a method of instruction where you could get the best out of them. And it was all depended really, well, don't say all, but largely on personality, which it still applies even in schools. If you've got a personable teacher, instructor, they can do a lot more with even the numbskulls than a lot of the high-flying people, you know, I know this. That doesn't apply.
And this is what really counted in the Navy, was the ability to relate.
The
to
ability. Yes.
If people weren't suitable, I mean, they could be spotted, I think you said. If men were, apart from the results, I mean, there would be some men who were not really good instructors, either through bullying or something.
Well, could, you see, the whole point is this, that if you weren't working with a large number of men, be it instructors or even the classes themselves or officers, as far as that goes, if you've got any experience of instruction at all, you can easily watch and you can pick out almost instantly, to put it in a crude language, the sheep from the goats, and those who are worth following or worth any notice at all, they make it noticeable by the actual results obtained by the classes. And that applies equally through school.
And what sort of ages were these men? I mean, did the age vary, or were they much old, tended to be older men?
Oh, yes. They were usually men within the last, we'll say, 5 years of their service. That would put them, we'll say, 35, 40s, you see.
Or more.
Because
older.
The service started from the age of 18, and if a man was going on for 22 years, he naturally was going to retire at 40. You see, so by the time a man had got to his, what we knew as a second period, that was at 30. You see, the first period was 12 years, taking him to 30. Then they had to sign on again, and providing they came up to scratch, not necessarily have to, but providing they did, they could re-engage for the second period, so you've taken them from 30 to 40. And by that time, of course, they were quite naturally in their respective ratings, they were senior people, and the senior petty officers were the ones they selected for instructors, you see. Well, leading seamen too, as far as that goes, but the majority were petty officers. And by that time, they'd had full experience of the old gamut, so they knew, in those days, you see, the instructors were largely ex-sailing days. And, I mean, they had to live up to a standard of discipline, which they imbued on the people they were instructing. So it became progressive, you see. And as you went along, you couldn't see things in the same light as the people who were just starting, quite naturally. The same thing applies today.
And were these sort of men that you could go and, if you were a bit troubled about something in those days, could you go and see the instructor?
Approach them, yes.
Yes, were they approachable?
Yeah, definitely, oh yes. And I can remember one of the first gunnery instructors I had, he was a real Spartan, but he was a man all the time. And if he was in any doubt, he used to stand with his hand behind his back. Well, of course, quite a big man he was, to us kids anyway. And he'd stand with his hands behind his back, strictly to attention. You know, he'd stand stiff as a poker, I mean, not to attention, but stiff as a poker, and say, watch your tongue. Or, I don't understand, sir. You don't understand it, all right? Now we'll start from the bottom. Then you go right through the old detail. And by the time you left him, you knew, as he did. Which I personally, I accepted him more or less as a standard on which to work. Because, I mean, after all, well, the art of instruction, as I say, to come back to the old thing again, is your ability to pass it on.
Yes, if you were troubled about something personal, I mean, if you had a problem about family or you felt there was something wrong, you know, in a personal...
It didn't matter what you were there.
Could they help you? Would they be able to help you? Was the door always open?
Yes, oh yes. And you could always approach that, even the senior officers, if you wanted to.
Would this direct you to the senior officer?
Yes,
if, they
yes, if it was necessary. Mm-hmm. Oh yes, you could even approach the Admiralty, if it was serious enough. You see, you take, in the fleet for instance, if a man would say had been, thought he'd been unjustly punished, he could request to see the Admiral. Well, the captain of the ship would go into the pros and cons because it would be, he'd have to answer the Admiral why it wasn't dealt with earlier. And if the case was serious enough, you could see the Admiral.
Do you know of any cases?
Oh, yes, I knew several.
Yes?
And even got as far as the Admiralty.
Mm-hmm. Do you know which one particularly? Can you mention any one that, an outline, not without names, but that somebody actually decided that he had been unjustly treated in this, and he went on. You don't remember any?
I do, but I couldn't recall the actual details.
Yeah.
I mean, if you take take the case of a battleship, for instance, where you're dealing with, say, 900 men. The captains of those ships, you see, were always senior men. They were doing their last few months prior to promotion to admiral, to their flag. Mm. And I was with one particular man. He was a real Spartan, too. And he died a good many years ago. But anyway, this particular case, a petty officer had transgressed against the law, because at that time of day, this may sound funny, but it's true, the customs regulations were that the landing of tobacco wasn't allowed, even on a man's service draft. And there were places where tobacco was not allowed to be landed at all, such as Portland. Now, we'd had a patrol landed, I was in the Royal Sovereign then, and we'd had a patrol landed in Weymouth, you see, for the period of the stay of the fleet. And this man came down to Portland to catch a boat back, instead of catching it at Weymouth, in which case he would have got free. When he got back into Portland base, the customs stopped him, and he was coming aboard with his kit, and he had a tin of tobacco. And he was charged with smuggling. He shouldn't have had it on him, you see. Well, anyway, this case went through the ordinary circles, and when he came up for punishment, he lost two badges. Well, of course, that would effectively put in paid to any further promotion as far as he was concerned. He was very grieved about it, and he thought he had been unjustly treated. So, after the captain, of course, the punishment then was by warrant, you see, he read out to the ship's company. Everybody knew the details and what knew. He wasn't satisfied, so he requested the next day to the commander to see the captain with the view to seeing the admiral. And much to everybody's amazement, we all said to him, said, well, you won't get far with that. There's regulations. I don't care, he said, I'm going. And he did. And the captain said, yes, you want to see the admiral? You can. Yes. Master Arms, get this man along here at specific time. Sent a duty boat out to the flag. Made a signal to the admiral prior to this, of course. Made the arrangements. But anyway, when the time came, he saw the admiral. And he stated his case. He'd been ashore on duty and he was coming back. So the admiral said to him, are you aware of the regulations? Well, of course, as a petty officer, he couldn't say anything but yes. He said, and the regulations state tobacco should not be landed at Portland? Yes. What the hell do you want to see me about? Go away, don't be a fool. Well, of course, he came back with his tail between his legs, but, I mean, there was the justice of the thing.
Yes.
He was an idiot for doing it in the first instance.
But at least he got up to the
He
voice.
Got to what he wanted, you
yes.
see.
Yes. And this business of discipline in the Navy, you said correctly, very sensibly, was embodied in the life of the thing. I mean,
exactly.
You moved into it and it encompassed you in a way. Mm. You found the discipline of Navy life quite acceptable.
Yes.
You found it comfortable and
absolutely.
And you could see the reason for it.
Yes,
in
definitely.
What, in what way? What precisely did you
well,
say?
Well, I mean, the whole point was, it centred on what I've said before. The implicit obedience of an order given by a superior in rank or rating. That rank order would only be given by somebody who is qualified to give it. In other words, the experience would be there.
Yes.
And if it was necessary for an order to be given, it should be obeyed implicitly, without question. because the experience would point out to the person in charge a circumstance which possibly the man wasn't aware of. Say, don't do that, come here. Or something of that nature. And I've seen many times where that saved life.
Mm. You say it was built on confidence and respect mainly. Yeah. This was what
that's my own idea of it.
Yeah. And you always found it to be that,
yes.
Basically.
Yes.
Things must go, as you said, swimmingly.
Yes.
In the Navy. Was your experience of discipline always as fair as that? I mean, was it that it was always as consistent and as fair as you have said it is?
Oh, yes. Basically. Well, I considered it to be so because, I mean, you'd always get the type of person who would try to kick her against discipline, you see. Mm. But when you come right down to rock bottom, it would be, in the majority of cases, it was sheer cussedness. You know, why should they? It was never said openly, why should they do that? Mm. But the implicit thing was, there was always the hidden suggestion that I know as much about it as he does, sort of thing. But as I say, I've been in ships where the rules were observed to the letter. And in those days, those ships were known on the lower deck as a pusser's routine. You see, in other words, if K, R, and A, I said so, it was so. On the